Hina Margaret Aġus, nsen milkom, unilqakom għal program ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. U l-lum, kif wieħedkom fil-program li għadda, se nitkellmu dwar il-kittieba nisa Ġermaniżi ta' 18 u 19 seklu u l-ħrejjef tagħhom. U tajt x'teżor ta' ħrejjef għandhom dawn in-nisa. Għandkom tkunu tafu li fost dawn in-nisa kittieba li se nitkellmu dwarhom. Hemm ftit nisa li kienu imqarbin mhux ħażin għal dak iż-żminijiet, bħal pereżempju l-Imperatriċi Katarina t-tieni tar-Russja. U ħafna nies oħrajn li kienu bdew jitħarġu mhux ħażin fil-moviment komunista. Hemm ukoll persuna rjali oħra par-Reġina Eliżabetta tar-Rumanija li fil-faddi miskina kienet il-kontra iktar qalat militat u dawn li qed insemmi kienu kollha Ġermaniżi. Kien forsi jidher li fil-Ġermanja l-uniċi kittieba tal-ħrejjef kienu biss l-aħwa Grimm, hekk kif ġara fi Franza, fejn in-nisa kittieba ġew oskurati minn xal però u l-istess ġara fil-Ġermanja. Da forsi wkoll kien minħabba li l-ħrejjef tal-aħwa Grimm kien jiffurmaw parti mill-kurrikulu nazzjonali fl-iskejjel minħabba l-element patriottiku. Kif wara kollox b'għajna nagħmlu aħna llum il-ġurnata insegwu l-aktar il-ħrejjef ta' però, Grimm u Anderson. Issa kif diġà urejna f'din is-serje, in-nisa taw il-kontribut tagħhom mhux biss għaliex kienu huma li għaddew dan il-ħrejjef minn fom għal fom, iżda dawk in-nisa illi kellhom ix-xorti li jieħdu edukazzjoni xierqa u li kellhom it-talent tal-kitba ħassew li kellhom jaqsmu dawn il-ħrejjef permezz tal-kitba. Ukoll jekk ma ġewx ippubblikati. U fil-programmi li ġejjin beħsieb li naqsam magħkom dan it-teżor ta' ħrejjef li rnexxin insib ta' dawn in-nisa Ġermaniżi u taraw kemm kienu jikbu stil differenti mill-irġiel kif wara kollox għamlu l-kittieba nisa Franċiżi. Kif ammettew l-aħwa Grimm kien hemm iktar minn 50 mara li kontribwew għall-ħrejjef tagħhom. Għalhekk m'għandniex għalfejn nistaġbu illi daw in-nisa xi darba iddeċidew jibdew jikdbu. Imma meta niġu għall-kitba, x'kien iġiegħel dawn in-nisa jikdbu? Ħafna kienu jikdbu, dejjem qed nirreferu għall-ħrejjef, biex jaqraw dawn il-ħrejjef l-itfal tagħhom jew l-itfal li kienu jgħallmu jew kellhom kuntatt magħhom. Palma għamlu l-kittieba Ġermaniżi Maximilian de la Roche Brentano, Caroline Stahl, flimkien ma' Maritim, Amelie Shop u Reġina Eliżabetta tar-Rumanija. Billi kien diffiċli ħafna biex kittieba nisa jiġu aċċettati bħala drammaturgi, ħafna ħassew li l-linja tal-kitba tal-ħrejjef kienet aktar aċċettata. Palma wara kollox għamlu ħafna kittieba nisa pal Caroline von Günderode u Marie von Ebne Eisenbach. U dwar xiex kienu jikdbu dan il-kittieba nisa fil-ħrejjef tagħhom? Dwar l-imħabba, il-familja u dwar in-nisa kif kienu jimmaturaw, ir-relazzjoni bejniethom, ma' ommijiethom, kienu wkoll jikdbu dwar ir-responsabiltajiet tagħhom. Kif in-nisa kellhom ikunu autonomi fejn fl-istess ħin jikxfu l-iskjavitu lejn is-sess maskili u l-inġieba ħażina tas-sess oppost. U waħda minn dawn il-kittieba nisa li għexet bejn l-1813 u l-1894 kienet il-kontessa Sophie von Baudissin li kienet assoċjata ma' ħafna ċelebritajiet kemm artisti kif ukoll nies letterarji li kienu jinkludu fost ħafna lil Hans Christian Andersen. Dada l-aħħar kien iħobb ħafna jmur Dresden u billi l-kontessa kienet ukoll mużiċista rinomata ma setawx ma jiltaqgħux. Il-kontessa skoprit ukoll li kellha d-don tal-kitba u fost il-ħafna ħrejjef li kitbet hemm waħda li kitbet wara r-rivoluzzjoni falluta tal-1848 magħrufa wkoll bħala Merz Revoluzzjon fejn ħafna stati Ġermaniżi kienu qegħdin jiġġieldu għad-demokrazija u l-għaqda nazzjonali. F'kelma waħda ma rnexxielhom jagħmlu xejn biex jelbu lil Napoleon. Issibaw kem isabiħa din il-rafa. Li kif edin topsru nix innoċenti daqs kem wieħed jaħseb għal kem jisima The Doll Institute. F'kelma waħda din il-rafa tider li titratta dwar revoluzzjoni kontra l-re. Għalix kien se jaħdilhom il-pupi. Iżda naħseb aktar kien titratta dwar xi tiran ieħor pal forsi Napoleon li rid inneżaħhom mid-drittijiet u forsi kien qiegħed jitrattom pal pupi, pal oġġetti. U f'din l-istorja il-kontessa tajt ukoll illi l-mexxejja jafu jaljenawna u jalqulna ħalqna. Mela qiegħed nisimgħuha. The Doll Institute. Once upon a time, there lived a terrible tyrant. He wasn't Nero, or Caligula, or Ezzelino, but he probably wasn't much better than them. For just imagine it. One day, he cruelly decreed that little girls in his kingdom should no longer play with dolls, and that they were to hand over all their loved ones to him within 3 days. Imagine the outcry throughout the land. Not only the little daughters, but the mothers too were outraged. Since no one person dared disobey alone, they decided to plan and work together to see what could be done. Perhaps never before had women put their heads together so often. In the meantime, the little girls played even more busily than before with their dolls. Many of them, who otherwise would have preferred to play with their brothers' swords and guns, dug out their neglected dolls, because there were only 2 days left before they had to surrender them. One of these little girls was Flora. She had the most beautiful doll in the whole city. The doll was almost as big as Flora herself. Her face, arms, and legs were made of wax, and they were even jointed like real limbs. Her big eyes blinked, and every day of the week Flora dressed her in a new outfit. Her wardrobe was simply fabulous. Adelgunde, that was the doll's name, had lain for several weeks in a corner of the room. Her hair was uncombed, and she was still wearing the yellow crepe dress she'd had on for the latest tea party, but no shoes or socks. So now she could hardly believe what was happening to her when Flora pressed her ever so sweetly to her chest and sobbed over and over, "Oh, Adelgunde, my beloved Adelgunde, they're going to take you away from me." In the meantime, the mothers had found out that the king's cruel ban was the result of a certain prejudice against dolls. He had a daughter who had never really grown up and now spent the day trying on different outfits. Because she had often played with dolls in her childhood, the king assumed her obsession with dressing up came from this earlier pastime. Hence, his terrible decree.
"Women should be useful members of my state," he said. "Not vain fiends of fashion."
Hardly had they discovered the king's reasons than the mothers assembled again, and this is the plan they devised. On the day that all dolls were supposed to be handed over, the king had happened to be standing at his window. From there he saw an interminably long procession of people moving through the streets towards the castle. Slowly he began to make out hundreds of festively clothed little girls. Each of them led or carried her doll, and they were all different kinds. The girls in the front rows had jointed dolls made of wax. Flora led the procession with Adelgunde, who was dressed in a red satin dress and black velvet cap. Behind her came the unassuming members of doll society, who had wooden or porcelain faces and were dressed in nursemaid or maid attire. At the end came the baby dolls. Many of them could let out a little cry if you knew the right spot to press. As the procession reached the castle, all the little girls fell in unison to their knees, their dolls with them, while the baby dolls joined the choir and let out their pitiful wails. "Mercy! Mercy!" Before the king had opened the window and could speak, Flora took Adelgunde by the hand, stepped forward, and delivered the following speech. "Your Majesty, Obeying your command, we are prepared to sacrifice our greatest joy to you. We understand that you are only thinking of our welfare when you plan to take away the playthings with which you believe we have squandered our time. The king nodded approvingly as Flora continued. But consider, Your Majesty, that this play is not mere trifling. Aren't we rehearsing our future responsibilities? Don't we learn to carry children, care for them, and practice the virtues of good housekeeping? Consider, Your Highness, which talents you stifle in us if you take our dolls away. What's learned in youth is practiced in age. As the saying goes, and as the twig is bent, so the tree is inclined. As much as we love our dolls today, all the more will we love and care for our children later. Would you rob us so early on of the chance to develop and nurture our enthusiasm for motherhood? Flora halted, while the king appeared to reconsider. He hadn't thought about playing with dolls from that point of view before. The children quickly exploited their advantage. Once again, they fell to their knees and cried, this time in the tune of Robert the Devil, "Mercy! Mercy!" The jointed dolls knelt down. The baby dolls wailed more pitifully than before. The king appeared convinced.
"Silence!" he called out, covering his ears.
Then he himself began to speak.
"I give my consent," he began. "Go home with your dolls in peace."
A resounding cheer interrupted him as he continued,
"But only on one condition. Your fledglings must be pleased with the plan and not prefer their freedom."
The little girls laughed to themselves. How on earth could dolls have an opinion? And how would they express it anyway? What they didn't know is that a despot always has ways to enforce his will. Hardly had the king addressed the dolls than they were able to speak.
"Are you satisfied with this plan?"
he asked. And the dolls, who felt honored by the king's addressing them, and quite smug in their finery, and who remembered the kind treatment they had enjoyed in the last few days, cried out in unison, "Yes, we are satisfied."
"Good," said the king. "And I grant you the right, if you are not treated well and well cared for, or if you are subjected to bad treatment, to bring your grievances directly to me. If they are well-founded, you need no longer endure them, but will be at liberty to leave."
This time the dolls only nodded in response, but they took note of what the king had said. The procession headed slowly off, and at the central square every girl joyously headed off in a different direction, giddy with victory, and rushed home with her doll in tow. Everything went well for a time, but then one doll, after another, turned to the king. One said,
"I certainly don't like to complain, but enough is enough. They left me outside on a garden bench all night long, and it rained the whole time. The next morning my rosy cheeks were all wet, and the colour from my hair had blackened my forehead. Ever since, instead of feeling sorry for me, they look at me askance and hide me when company comes."
Another lamented,
"The game they play with me is that I misbehaved and should be punished, and sometimes they punch me in the nose and knock a hole in my head, like the one Regina's showing you."
Adelgunde, who was wearing a veil, chimed in,
"I haven't been put to bed for weeks, even though I was given to my mistress this past Christmas Eve. But then I lay on lovely soft feather pillows with snow-white covers, and there was a chest of drawers full of fine linens and fancy outfits. They even sang songs to me in the cradle. And what do I get now? Lying forgotten in the cinders, while I have to watch my wardrobe being used to clean paintbrushes and pens. And the cat sleeps in my bed. Yet I would have borne it all in silence if I hadn't experienced an even greater disgrace today. Look, great and righteous sovereign."
The doll continued as she drew back her veil.
"They let Flora's brother paint a moustache on me, and he wasn't even punished. And she laughed while he did it. She just laughed." Adelgunda fell silent, and the king, stunned by her terrible tale, showed her the greatest respect. He offered her, and all the other dolls who had registered grievances with him, a former institute for young ladies as a place to live. And every day more refugees sought asylum there. Only the baby dolls stayed true to their mistresses, either because they were still too young or because they couldn't walk on their own. For a while, the dolls enjoyed their freedom, but the joy soon subsided. They didn't get along with each other. Everybody wanted to be in charge, and the gossiping was just terrible. Probably, they had learned this behavior from their young mistresses. A bad example lingers. Then they heard about a child in town named Agatha, whose doll was supposed to be faring well. Agatha hadn't just taken care of her and kept her neat and tidy for years on end, but she even tailored outfits for her and bought her a new head every Christmas. And that's no small matter, even if the old one is still pretty. She preferred her old doll over any new one. Now all the dolls wanted refuge at Agatha's. Adelgunda said that no one would turn her away. She forgot she had lain in the ashes, but even if she had been as pretty and fashionable as before, Agatha had room for only one doll at home, and no new one could take the place in her heart that Blanche, her doll, occupied. She took such good care of her that even now that she's grown up and married, her own daughter can still play with Blanche. In the meantime, the dolls had grown tired of their independence and bickering in the institute. But they didn't want to return to their former mistresses. They were afraid they would be laughed at. So they set out toward Nuremberg for a large toy warehouse where they were welcomed and received new heads and new attire. There, they weren't allowed to quarrel in the presence of so many big and small tin soldiers. So slowly but surely, they forgot how to speak at all. You can lose all interest in talking when you're forever on the shelf. Finally, they were all sent off to other countries. Go out and buy one, but treat them well and heed Agatha's example.
Kif rajtu hemmhekk dik il-ħrafa dan it-tiran ma narsab soluzzjonijiet biex juri bit waħda li kien demokratiku u bl-oħra idaħħalhom fin-nassa kif ritu. Mara li żgur ma kienx tagħmel qajb lill-kontessa għalkemm kienet ġejja minn familja umli kienet Louise Dittmar li għexet bejn l-1807 u l-1884. Kienet tgħix Darmstadt u billi kienu ħafna tfal misiera ma setax jagħtiha d-dota. U baqgħet ma' żewġitx. Tat ħajjitha lill-politika u lill-kitba. Tistgħu tobsru kemm kienet attiva matul ir-rivoluzzjoni li riferejna għaliha diġà dik ta' l-1884 u kienet qed iżżomm ma' dawk li kienu kontra Napoljun. Kienet tikkritika bl-aħrax il-poplu Ġermaniż għal iskonti kien beżżiegħi fejn tidħol il-politika u kienet tgħidilhom li kellhom moħħhom magħluq. U fil-fatt innotajna wkoll li wkoll il-kontessa Sophie Baudoussin kienet qiegħda tikkritika b'xi mod in-nies li kienu qegħdin jibżgħu iwasslu l-messaġġ tagħhom. Tistgħu timmaġinaw kemm kienet rivoluzzjonarja l-kitba tagħha. Irridu niftakru li daw kienu żminijiet fejn il-mara ma kellix drittijiet. Allura hawnhekk ara daqsxejn kemm ma kienx verament tibża din il-mara meta qiegħda tikkritika lil dawk in-nisa li jiġu mibjuwajn ishom xadini fi żwieġ u li jqogħdu għal kollox. Issa Madame d'Aulnoy, tiftakru l-kittieba Franċiża, kienet kitbet xi ħaġa simili fil-ħrafa Babjol, iżda qiegħu nisimgħu il-verżjoni ta' Louise Dittmar, Tale of the Monkeys. Once upon a time, there was a merchant who dealt wholesale in monkeys. But after a while, the monkey trade began to decline, and the merchant went bankrupt. What to do with that huge stockpile of monkeys? The merchant knew of nothing else to do with them except buy and sell them. They were eating up his capital, but he thought drowning them would be a shame. yet his warehouse was so overstocked that the poor monkeys couldn't even frolic around. What then did the merchant do? He started up a business in customized monkeys. He packed up each monkey separately, wrapped up some speciality item with it, and attached an appropriate label. One was marked kitchen herbs. Others were labeled parlor greenery, nest egg, fashion items, please expedite, and so on. Then he placed the packages on the counter with a sign that said, take one free. Once in a while, the labels enticed the customer to take a package home. But once the customer had taken it, as is, gotten it home, and then realized contain a live animal, that stopped holding still once the transaction was complete, it dawned on him that he had been duped. And even that retail trade was not working anymore, for monkey culture had developed to the point that the monkeys were catching on to their master's tricks, and they put up a life and death struggle to avoid getting crated up.
If monkey culture continues apace, said the merchant in despair, these monkeys will eventually learn reason from their masters, and that will be the kiss of death to my trade. Stupid monkeys, shouted the disgruntled merchant and his customers. Nature has decreed that monkeys will be monkeys and nothing else. If you ever come to true awareness of your own monkeyhood and try to defend yourselves with reason against your masters, you will wind up driving both merchant and customer into bankruptcy.
With this fairy tale in his pocket, Juiced Milieu went out to seek a bride. He didn't think much about the monkey moral, but remembered instead his mother's lesson about men never getting the heave-ho from any girl. Over and over again he found his mother's words not only confirmed, but even understated. He hadn't been raised to think overly much of himself, but all the irresponsible praise he encountered on his bride quest made him so vain that he started to adore himself. He even demanded that the female supplicants kneel at his feet to ask permission to adore him. It went so far that he made his followers form an actual cult around him, acknowledging no other god than him and worshipping him as the Être Supreme. All these pleased Juiced Milieu immensely, and he knew how to keep his followers in thrall. Everyone knows that the best way to keep people aching for signs of recognition is to parcel them out grudgingly. Monsieur Juiced Milieu, the vice president for unjust taxation adjustments, made himself at home like a rooster ruling the roost of a recently foreclosed barnyard. Juiced Milieu's mother had given him a magnifying glass that had the ability to show him every young girl as she would be if she became his wife. Occasionally, he would take out this curious instrument that every suitor should use instead of a monocle. With it, he saw that one of the goddesses worshipping him, whom he had considered to be the epitome of innocence, was, in actuality, the pinnacle of stupidity. Another laughing girl became a weeping woman. A third gave her hand at the altar only to shout, "Checkmate!" A fourth embraced him while saying, "My darling lifesaver!" A fifth took away his pipe and made him dance around for it. A sixth girl actually turned into a spider who had caught him like a fly in her web. Inexplicable transformations, thought Juiced Milieu, shaking his head. But he kept remembering the historical development in the tale of the monkeys, in which a real monkey eventually emerged from a retail surprise package. That is what comes of an overdeveloped sense of enlightenment and overly sophisticated culture, he philosophized. They try to teach machines to talk and monkeys to think. Where will it all end? Eventually, the spiders will all insist that they are enchanted princesses and demand to be saved, and the heiresses of the heroines of the capital will expect to be idolized.
In his damnation of the whole female infestation, our hero did not learn a thing. As long as he was in love, he was convinced that the heavens would make an exception in his case, because he was his mama's boy. And his high-flown expectations were not any higher than the next man's. He simply demanded a simple, modest, virtuous, sweet, pleasing, domestic, educated, reasonable, talented, lovely, and rich wife, whose whole heart he would fill completely, who would hang on his every word with undying love and loyalty, and who would think of nothing else but him. Under these conditions, Juste Millière prided himself that he would consider her his equal, assuming that she would never call his authority into question. Finally, he made his choice cleverly and carefully, like children do at the fair. He picked a woman whom he believed possessed all those qualities. His wife believed it herself and prided herself on one particular virtue that was missing from all those women from foreign places who deceive their husbands in so many ways. Her best trait was that she had deceived her husband only once, when she married him. A deception to last a lifetime. The best thing about this sorry situation was that neither of them noticed it. And if they were ever disappointed in their hopes, they consoled themselves that these were the ways of a weary world, and did not look further into the matter.
Nittama li l-program tal-lum oġobkom u fil-program li miss nkomplu niskopru aktar rejjef ta' dawn in-nisa Ġermaniżi ta' 18 u 19 seklu. Pal l-imperatriċi Katerina t-tieni, li ma nafx kif kella l-ħin tikteb il-ħrejjef għaliex mill-inqas kella ma' tlet maħbubin barra l-fatt li kienet dejjem b'xi komplott fejn spiċċat ukoll għatlet ir-raġel tagħha. U se nitkellmu wkoll dwar Eliżabetta tar-Rumanija li b'kuntrast ma' Katerina spiċċat hi l-vittma tar-raġel tagħha u se taraw kemm kellhom ħrejjef interessanti. Sa dan it-tant jiena Magrita Juice insemmilkom.